Good evening, Steele.
Good evening, Dave. Dave, I have something for your ears tonight. You think it's taking care of business at first, but actually, it's not. It's a little better. It's taking way too long to get to the chorus here, but it's worth it. Dave Jensen, I want to hold you in parentheses.
Yeah.
The reason why I bring this up tonight is today is the first day of a new semester. School is back in session where I'm at.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Thousands of kids on campus. And that song brings to mind so many things, but mostly I love the line, "I love you, question mark." And that's a perfect segue to our guest tonight.
You're not sure how you feel about him?
No, question mark. Come on.
Mark. Oh, yeah. Hey, it's Mark Ellison.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
Somewhere outside Seattle, Washington, right?
That's right.
Man, how you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great.
How do you feel about Steele? Is there question marks or just
no,
periods?
No, come on. He loves me, period. No,
exactly. Steele's a great guy.
That was you know, just a dreadful song. I mean, I think we all really enjoyed it, but yeah, that was horrendous.
Man, I remember when that song came out, and it was a real scandal in my house because of that "mentally undresser" line. One of my brothers would sing it all the time, I think, to get on my mom's nerves. And
my mom put her foot down and said, "That is no way to treat a teacher."
Is there a reason that you subjected us to that?
Yeah, Dave, it leads into the theme tonight. Not only is it the first day of school, but the theme for our show tonight, the three R's: reading, writing, arithmetic.
Oh, man. Back in school. Mark, when's the last time you were in school? It's been at least like 6 months, right?
I've been out of school for almost 4 years.
Whoa.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Dang, Mark.
Sure.
You've been living life.
But I spent 9 years post high school in school. So
that's nothing.
That's true. Yeah.
I've spent 11 years post college graduation in school.
So of the three of us, who will have spent the most time in school post high school? It might be me, and I'm the one that doesn't like school.
It's true.
Wait, really?
Yeah, it might be Dave in the end.
But
are you going back to school?
I'm in school right now, Mark.
That's why he had to cancel the podcast last week.
Oh, snap.
I can't stop.
I got to say, if I was going to ask the question of who among us will have spent the most time in a library. But if Steele becomes a career librarian,
I might have a leg
he's
up.
He's going to win that one.
I might have a leg up.
I don't know that if he could eclipse you even then, Mark.
If the question is, who spent the most time sleeping in the library, I'll never catch you, Mark.
Oh. I rank right up there with a couple of homeless guys that I know.
Yeah. Yeah. You and a couple of hobos are like probably top 10 leaderboard. Oh, well, this is great because what I want to know is, speaking of libraries, speaking of back to school, reading, writing, arithmetic, what's the best thing you read in the last year?
My last year has been dominated by fantasy books. I think we've talked about that extensively, and quite a bit of Aubrey and Maturin. That happened a lot. I used to really enjoy, you know, like intellectual fiction or stuff to like that would challenge me. But now, like, I have enough challenges in life. I just want something to entertain me. So right now I'm reading Brandon Sanderson's 1,200-page new fantasy novel about – that's, like, so complex. If I gave you, like, a synopsis of it, it would take 30 minutes. It's awesome.
What's the title, Dave?
Oathbringer, of course.
Oathbringer. And it's got
a woman in a dress on the cover, and there's, like, a floating sword. And then, like, if you open – inside, there's a woman wearing like a see-through crystal dress, and my girls were looking at it, and I'm like, I like this dress, and I closed the book hurriedly. And it's like, no, you don't. You don't like that.
Jensen, have you read, did Brandon Sanderson write Fablehaven?
No. Basically same guy, I think. But, yeah.
Have you read those ones?
I haven't. I heard.
I haven't read them either. I've just seen them laying around my nephew's house.
Brandon Mull, I just looked it up. So it's another Brandon.
Another Brandon.
They're related, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Brandon's love fantastical creatures. Brandon's just love that stuff. It's your name just makes it go that way.
Yeah.
And this week, guys, I've read tons of psychopharmacology. And and that's pretty good. It's pretty entertaining.
It's no Oathbringer, though.
No, that's the most frustrating part. Like, I'm stagnating in my Oathbringer because I'm reading all my psychopharmacology.
I try to give myself a little rule, and I say if I read a chapter of psychopharmacology, I can read a chapter of Oathbringer.
Yeah.
Works for me.
Words to live by.
Yeah. You know, okay, so Steele, you asked what's the best thing you read last year, and I'm just looking through to see kind of what I read last year. I read a couple things that were pretty good. So I've read a lot of nonfiction over the last years.
Me too.
I like you, was an English major as an undergrad. And I picked up and read 1984 for the first time this last year. And after having read so much nonfiction for so long, it was great to read such a great writer like George Orwell. Yeah. I mean, like, the writing is just so good, you know? What an interesting story at an interesting time in the world that we live in.
Yeah.
I cruised through that book too. I mean, it was like such a good, and the writing is just so good. It just sucked me right in.
You must have enormous brains, Mark.
I read one other book that actually was really fascinating that I wanted to tell you guys about called The Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh, you told me. Yeah, you mentioned this last time I saw you, I think. It sounded so good.
Yeah, it's a fascinating book, and it's a nonfiction account of, in the 1800s, the U.S. government forced the Osage Indians, who's like they're like a tribe in Oklahoma, off of their land onto kind of this barren, what they thought was like really kind of crappy land, ugly. And then it turns out that like some of the largest oil reserves discovered at the time were located under this new land that they had been pushed onto. And so the Osage Indians quickly became the richest people per capita on the planet. You know, they had like white servants working in their homes. Some of them had like multiple automobiles, etc. And The Killers of the Flower Moon is this very interesting account of a conspiracy to systematically kill off families in the Osage tribe, and to place for these guys who were doing it were placing themselves to be kind of the heirs of these families.
Dispossessing the natives and taking their oil wealth.
Yeah. It was a fascinating story. And apparently it was like J. Edgar Hoover's first kind of like major victory as like a early kind of leader in the FBI. And it was part of what kind of led him to becoming a longtime FBI director. Pretty fascinating. That's a fast, good like – nonfiction, but like a really good read.
Yeah, that sounds great. I want to read that. It's on my list now.
Yeah, oil always leads to violence, Mark. That's why we got to get on these electric cars and electric recharging stations. Come on, Mark. Let's
exactly.
do this, man.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
How about you, Steele? Are you going to share anything with us? Or are you?
So I put together my list. I read in 2017, not counting dissertation and work reading, 60 books last year.
Holy cow, Steele.
Yeah.
That's a lot of books.
And almost or more than a third of them were the Aubrey Maturin series, Master and Commander novels that Dave suggested.
Wow. Yeah.
You used your year well. You did it well.
I read all 20, I think, starting in like September or something like that, and read them all before the end of the year, and it was totally worth it. But my top
do
five.
Do yourself a favor, Mark, and do that as well.
Like, you really honestly. Should.
No, I have the first one, and I've always meant to read it because my dad and some of my brothers really love those books.
Once you start it, you'll want to read them all. They really are good.
Yeah,
but my favorite book this year was actually a book called The Color of Law by Richard Rothstein. He was writing a series of articles about essentially the history of de facto housing segregation in the United States. And then Ta-Nehisi Coates read a couple of these articles and said, "Hey, man, stop writing articles. You need to write a book." And he put him in touch with his editor. And so the book that resulted, what he's trying to make the argument is that several Supreme Court decisions recently have argued, yes, it's true, Americans have been racist and prejudiced, but the story of housing segregation is the result of a bunch of individual prejudice. It's de jure, or it's de facto segregation rather than de jure. So it's just the result of individual choices rather than the result of legal
systematic
action.
Policy. Yeah. Or, yeah.
And so because of that, we can't take action, or it's inappropriate for us to take action to remedy it. It's unfortunate, but we can't. And so his book lays out the case that, in fact, this is he lays out a very systematic argument for de jure segregation and its impact on current housing patterns in the United States. And it was stunning. It was super impressive, very well researched, compelling stories, compelling evidence, or the best and most important book I read all of last year.
That is really fascinating.
So you finally accepted that the racism is a motivating thing in American culture?
I mean, I'm on the fence still. It's hard when you have such a colorblind president, but
yeah, he's the least racist president we've ever had.
He's actually probably the least racist person who's ever lived. I mean, that's what I heard,
or ever will live.
And he's told me that he's the racist person that I know. So that's probably true.
Yeah, probably.
You know, one interesting Donald Trump tidbit that I just wanted to share with you guys. Maybe you guys saw this. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk around his tweets and, like, what's the deal with these tweets? Uh-huh. And some guy did this really interesting analysis where they look at topics discussed on Fox and Friends and the time at which they're discussed and then lays it out with when Donald Trump is tweeting. Did you guys see this?
No.
Trump's just live tweeting Fox and Friends. Like, that's, like, literally within, like, 5 minutes of when Fox and Friends will air its segment, Donald Trump will come out with his random rant of the day.
Wow.
I don't know. Is that more benign or less benign than we
were
hoping?
Are you suggesting that would be watching Fox News? Is that your suggestion?
Apparently that takes 3 hours of executive time every day to watch Fox News.
When I read about executive time, like I thought, like, man, where's my executive time? That time sounds awesome.
I know, seriously.
If I had some executive time, I'd read 60 books too.
Come back to grad school.
Steele's just living it up in executive time.
Boom. That's what I call it when I go to the bathroom. I just take a book in there. It's executive time. Don't interrupt me.
So, guys, speaking of executive time, we do have a podcast to record. This is actually a musically based podcast rather than ever we've done so far. But reading, writing, arithmetic
you
is
got
the
it.
Theme. We talked about reading. We're talking about schooling. We have three men with advanced degrees, or at least two with advanced degrees, and one that someday will.
I get it.
Steele,
Yeah, yeah, I get it. Cool. So who's going to start us off? Who's going to get the first reading song? Is that you, Dave?
Oh yeah, it is. I'm super excited. So guys, you may remember, like, ago I loved Belle and Sebastian. You guys familiar with that?
I remember that.
Yeah.
I think you listened to Belle and Sebastian after some date with Berkeley one time.
Of course I did. Man, that makes me feel really sad.
It should.
But like every single one of their songs is about reading books. And like today at work, I listened to some Belle and Sebastian. And after like 2 minutes, I will not listen to this. I couldn't handle it anymore. Mm. So I want to give you guys a song that's really about like real reading, like reading that you need to do. This is Led Zeppelin, Ramble On.
I gotta get to Gollum.
Yeah, you do. It's deep in there.
Here we go.
That doesn't actually happen in Lord of the Rings.
No, Gollum never kidnaps a woman that Robert Plant is in love with. It's stunning.
Guys, you obviously haven't read all of Tolkien's writings. I mean, come on. There's an entire one that's actually called Led Zeppelin. So you're just not familiar with the plethora that's out there.
You know, if we were to do a new theme, we really should just do Lord of the Rings soundtracks, because there's no song that I associate more with Mark Elison than that Annie Lennox one. Like Sunday mornings, man. on repeat. Return to the East or whatever that's. What was that song? Into the land.
Into the West.
Into the West. That's what it was. Oh, man, Mark. Those were the days. Never to be forgotten.
Halcyon days.
Guys, I took my three 5-year-olds on a hike, and it was an intense hike. Like I wasn't planning to do the whole thing. It's like up to this top of this hill, 2.5 miles, super intense. And as we're hiking, they want me to tell them a story. So naturally I'm telling them the Lord of the Rings, and we're getting to like, towards the climax, but we keep hiking. And I keep saying like, girls, don't you want to turn around? Like this hike's really intense, but they didn't want to stop because like they were associating the climb on the hike with like the climb and the intensity of the Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And we didn't stop hiking up until like Frodo had actually destroyed the ring. Then we could like return and start walking back down. It was awesome.
That sounds totally awesome.
The part of the story Dave doesn't tell is that they had quadruplets, but they had to drop one of the girls into Mount Doom, and then they came back with triplets. So that was the sad part.
You know, there's this one time in college when Jordan, Spencer, Tyler, and I, we took a road trip in the summertime up to my family's place outside Jackson. And we all went on this big hike. We climbed Table Rock Mountain. And then when you're climbing up Table Rock, you go through like, you go through a ton of forest, and then you kind of get to like more of kind of just kind of grass, you know, kind of mountain shrubbery. And then you get to this very barren kind of rock part. And I remember we were struggling. Tyler and I were, up in front of Jordan and Spence. We were kind of, it was getting tough because it gets really steep as you get into this rocky barren region. And then suddenly I hear this, and I turn around and Jordan has a recorder and he's playing Lord of the Rings.
That guy knows how to make a hike endurable. Okay, Dave, I want to keep it in the family. I'm going to move. We're going to stay. You went reading. I'm going to do writing, and I'm going to stay Robert Plant. This is both reading and writing. But this is Robert Plant and Alison Krauss. Please read the letter. I don't know if there's anybody that's had a more interesting musical career than Robert Plant.
And his voice was unrecognizable. I mean, I've listened to a lot of Led Zeppelin, as you know, any human has, and I wouldn't have recognized that as Robert Plant unless you told me. And it was beautiful.
What was the zenith of his career?
60s Zeppelin or 70s Zeppelin? It's got to be, right?
When they released
Puff Daddy Godzilla soundtrack?
Yeah, I forgot about that one. Yeah.
The double album Physical Graffiti, Mark. Come on, man. Every Zeppelin fan knows that.
Yeah. Janajan would have come and punched you in the face for that, Mark. Okay. So that's reading. That's writing. Arithmetic falls to Mark Ellison.
Yeah. This is actually a song from a Washington band. They're located about an hour north of Bellingham. Death Cab for Cutie, Long Division. Be a remainder.
Okay. Now here you
go. Nobody does.
I have something I want you to listen to and tell me if it sounds similar. Is that genetically related?
It's gotta be.
That's Devo. Whip It. I'd never heard it before, but in listening to Long Division, I was like, that kind of sounds like the start of Whip It. Anyway.
Yeah. Totally.
There's some kind of message. Some kind of message in there for us.
And does Long Division really suck? It seems like that's like saying something like Long Division is just like shorthand for like, that's the worst. Is Long Division like really that bad? Is it?
It's the worst.
I guess it is.
I actually really like Long Division. I've always liked difficult math problems. I went into the wrong career, clearly, but I was always like, cool. 647 divided by 23? Can't wait to get started on that.
That's not going to get you invited to cool parties, Steele. That's the problem, man. Huh. I think, what if we reverse the order now?
Okay, let's do it.
So I'm going to play an arithmetic song right after. This is a band from Olympia, Washington, real close to you, Mark, as well. The Pacific Northwest, they're creating music.
That's
right. Modest Mouse.
This one's called Never Ending Math Equation.
Sorry.
It's like steel math. It's all like really hard math. Never ending math equation.
That sounds like the most fun road trip I could imagine. You know, Dave, I think I probably heard the Mark Kozelek version of that first and then came to the original afterwards. But that's the version of that song that's anchored in my mind. It's really a lovely song. And hearing it in different contexts, you realize the kind of...
Yeah, I'm sure that it's a lot more gentle when he presents it. Yeah, I've heard him do covers of Modest Mouse. They're great. But the lyrics are interesting. But listening to it now, like, Modest Mouse is very aggressive. And a lot of the lyrics, like, that's not a band I introduced to my children. It's too much. I all my other favorite bands, like, I'll play them music, but they don't know who Modest Mouse is. They don't need to know.
Yeah, so for writing, I was thinking...
Yes, writing.
I was thinking maybe Beatles, Paperback Writer, but then I thought, no, I don't want to do that one. I was thinking Martha Wainwright, but that has a lot of swearing in it, so I won't do that one. And instead, I'm going to do an instrumental, but the title of the song is Ghost Rider. Do you guys remember that TV show?
Yeah. Is it the theme song to Ghost Rider?
I like to think so. I like to think so. If I were to do a remake of Ghost Rider, this would be the one that I'd pick as the theme song.
Remember how they, in Ghost Rider, they had that little bubble that floated around?
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't that be a real great feature of real life if Google could figure that out?
That's like feels like Snapchat or somebody should build that into their AR app, right?
Wow. Yeah.
Except Ghost Rider app. You think we could build that and make some money off of it?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's monetize it. Let's monetize childhood.
That's the thing that millennials are good at, right?
Totally. All right, this is RJD2, Ghost Rider.
All right, Steele. Pop quiz. What city did Ghost Rider the TV show take place in?
San Antonio.
Peoria, Illinois.
I'll give you a hint. No sleep till
Brooklyn. No way.
Yeah, dude. Can you name any of the cast?
No.
Sophie. Come on.
Diana. Margo.
Jamal.
Jamal.
Daniel Finkelstein.
That's a Brooklyn name if I ever heard one.
Flatbush. This is the multicultural Brooklyn of the 90s.
Yeah, it's true. Ghost Rider. Mm. Man, that show, they really need to remake that one. That was so good. And that'd be the, that's the soundtrack. I mean, would you watch that show if it starts off with that little boom, 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 boom?
It'd be good. You know it.
I'd watch anything that started with that. Yeah, I'm in.
Jamal. Blaze Burdahl as Lenny Frazier. Gabby Fernandez. I remember her.
Yeah, Gabby.
She was great. Tina Nguyen. Man, the guy who played Jamal Jenkins, his real name is Sheldon Turnipseed.
It's a great name.
if my name was Sheldon Turnipseed, I would just insist that whenever I get cast, they use my real name.
It sounds like a Harry Potter character.
It does. Oh, Sheldon Turnipseed. What'd he go on to do?
He's not on Wikipedia. I can't find him.
We got to check.
Maybe he's
on LinkedIn.
The interesting thing about Ghost Rider is they used to always send those like messages to each other, right? Mm-hmm. They'd like write a message and then send it. But like, how does Ghost Rider operate in a world of smartphones?
We really need to rewatch that show in like episode by episode and take detailed notes. That'd be so awesome. That'd be such a waste of our time, but so cool. Some real serious technological like analysis of the of how
Ghost Rider how would we actually redo era. Ghost Rider today?
Yeah. Yeah. I want show notes on my desk by next week, everybody.
But most plots of 90s television are ruined as soon as the cell phone's introduced. Like every single Seinfeld, they're like, wait, where's George now?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
It's all ruined.
As soon as he can text,
they can keep
like,
in constant touch
late.
With each other.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Okay. So
all right, guys.
Math, we've done writing. Now we need to end it out with some reading.
Yeah, so when I was picking my song, I was looking around for literary references that I really liked. And I thought about Ramble On, and I was playing around with some different options. And then I remembered a song that I love from the late 80s. I did a little research on the song. Turns out it wasn't as critically acclaimed as I would have thought it would be. It was nominated for a Razzie. But it has a great music video that you guys should check out sometime. It was filmed actually in the Sleepy Hollow Cemetery in New York. And the Ramones are on like kind of this weird kind of platform that goes up and down out of an open grave. And this is Pet Sematary, which is based on the Stephen King novel by the Ramones.
The concept is so relatable, you know? Like, yeah, I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery either, Ramones, Joey. Like, yeah, it's totally, man.
I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody who disagrees strongly with the lyrical sentiment of that song. Yeah. Maybe a cat.
Dude, those movies were creepy. I don't know if you guys remember that one. The first Pet Sematary movie was pretty creepy.
No. But I just looked up why it was spelled weird, and somebody on Google gave me an answer. It's how the kids spell it in the novel. So there you go.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm.
Interesting. Yeah. Stephen King, classic. Literary genius.
That's mean, but yeah, I get you. So we covered the basics. We got a song about Lord of the Rings. We got a song about Pet Sematary. Bookends, really. Classics of children's literature.
Books everybody needs to read. Actually, I've never read a Stephen King book.
Me neither.
Maybe I
read a couple of Stephen King books when I was like in middle school.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It. Did you read It?
No, I read the Dark Tower series. They actually just came out with a movie, I think of it.
Yeah.
There's a guy with a gun in it, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting, like, dystopian future, Wild West kind of combo.
That sounds good.
I mean, it was definitely, you know, gripping.
Well, go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to do the transition just like you, Steele. So you do it, man.
It's like we've done this show before.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're so good. We're professional.
You know, every week the fans write to us and they say, please answer please take our question from the show. We get thousands of pieces of fan mail, registered mail, usually, that we only answer registered mail. So don't bother sending an email.
As well. We get some telegrams.
Yeah, we do answer a telegram occasionally. But this one actually came to us.
Telexes? No? Yeah.
Dave has a telex machine, so he's the one that's in charge of that. But this one actually came to us by Ghostwriter, so we knew we had to take it, this one. Yeah, so this one came via Ghostwriter. This is from Luigi in Lungro, Italy. He said, what book most changed your worldview? I mean, what really blew your mind? For me, it's got to be Da Vinci Code. Holy crap. I didn't know that the Catholic Church had a guy they sent out to kill people. Luigi, man. You'd think living in Lungro, you'd learn a thing or two about the Catholic Church growing up, but apparently it took Dan Brown to blow Luigi's mind. You got any Dan Browns in your past, in your life, Dave?
I've missed out on them, but I think I might be in now after what Luigi's telling me. I just haven't dipped my toes in yet, but if Luigi's giving me a recommendation, accepted. Thank you.
Yeah.
Have you?
Start with Digital Fortress, Jensen.
Yeah, that's your recommendation.
Work. Yeah.
Okay. Have you read the whole collection of Dan Brown, though?
I haven't. I've read a handful of them.
Okay.
But they're all terrible.
No, come on.
I mean,
come on, Mark. But worldview changing books. Anybody?
Yeah, I've got one. Picture this: Steel Wagstaff is 16 years old.
Okay. Jean shorts?
Yeah, jorts. I'm wearing jorts every day. And okay. I go down in the summer to work for my grandpa, J.D. Mortensen. My best friend is Jack Bangeter.
I know him. Know him well.
Jack Bangeter and I go and work. We live in my grandpa's house. We work for my grandpa just to save a bunch of money for our lives. And while I'm there, I find this book in my grandpa's library. This is a book, a novel by Keith C. Terry. It's called Out of Darkness. And let me read you the premise here. What happens when 8 non-Mormon scholars are offered $100,000 each to spend 7 weeks cloistered on a lavish estate to test the Book of Mormon and document its authenticity? With a jet at their disposal to whisk them to the cradle of Mormonism in Palmyra, New York, the olive orchards of Samaria, and Hebrew University in Jerusalem, the researchers are plunged into a tantalizing search. Okay. The main character, the project coordinator, is named Peter Polk. Classic novel name. Mm. And the final sentence of their kind of beginning description is, compelling reading from beginning to end! Exclamation mark. I want to tell you, I have never, ever read another book like this. Ever. Except for the sequel, Into the Light. Yeah. And
Did you just pick up the sequel?
Yeah, I read them both. And it was so good that I would read long passages out loud to Jack Bangeter.
What's the premise of the sequel?
Spoiler alert, man, you got to buy it and find out, Mark. Do you want me to read that one to you too? I mean, it's good.
Well, I mean, you got these scars. I'm assuming somebody documents its authenticity.
Yeah, they clearly prove the Book of Mormon is the truest thing ever. So here's the sequel. Stephen Thorne, he's a PhD who's married to a Protestant who's like anti-Mormon. But anyway, he was converted to the church as a result of his involvement with the Book of Mormon Project. He's been hired by the project's administrator to help organize the next event of the project, a symposium to present external evidences of the Book of Mormon. Having been baptized 2 weeks earlier, he begins his work enthusiastically. Meanwhile, Stephen's wife, Annie, is outraged that he has embraced the Mormon religion and feels that his conversion will tear their marriage apart. They love each other deeply, but this obstacle seems insurmountable. Stephen, who has spent his entire career as an assistant to Annie's televangelist father, has lost his job as a result of joining the church. Now the entire family seems hopelessly at odds because of Stephen's new religion. The outcome will surprise and move you. Into the Light is LDS fiction at its absolute best. You won't be able to put it down. I can attest. Truer words were never spoken. These two books, I mean, I don't even think you need the Book of Mormon anymore after you finish these two. You seem to know that Keith C. Terry has done the world a great service in writing tremendous life-changing fiction.
So you mentioned, I love that line. LDS fiction at its best. This is a pretty low bar.
Ouch. Yeah. So that's my Da Vinci Code life-changing book from when I was 16. It was amazing. So
I think we should end on that one.
Okay. Luigi, questions answered. You might have questions and answers for this in earnest, though. I took a different approach, maybe, to answering it.
I think Luigi presented it earnestly, and I think it was disrespectful of you to answer it in such a way.
Yeah,
and if you were going to answer it in that way, the clear answer would be tennis shoes among the Nephites rather than what you presented. I mean, modern day kids, excellent fiction. And there was like 12 sequels to that. They just kept being among the Nephites. They just kept going back.
And if
My favorite of those books, Dave, was The Silver Swords of Gadianton.
Oh, man.
Or whatever.
So
the second
good.
One, where the Gadianton robbers come forward in time.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
That
was intense.
You know, I mentioned that Peter Polk was a pretty good Mormon fiction name, but doesn't hold a candle to Garth Plimpton.
Oh, man.
Garth Plimpton.
You trust that guy, and you know he has a strong testimony of the Book of Mormon. So, like, I'd love to be friends with Garth.
Jim Hawkins.
There you go. Life-changing. That's some life-changing LDS fiction. So, Luigi, maybe that will help you reevaluate your religious persuasion. Sounds like you might be Catholic. You're from Italy. You read some of this LDS fiction. I think you might reevaluate things.
Mark, you got any Desert Book bestsellers you want to throw on the list too to kind of pump up for the Easter season?
Oh, man. I can't top She's Among the Nephites. Nobody can, really.
It's so good. No,
Chris Heimerdinger at his best.
That was Chris Heimerdinger?
Is he still?
Oh, yeah.
Is he still making
That's
stuff?
The writer, right? That Chris Heimerdinger?
Yeah.
We're all frantically...
I'm Googling him.
Searching for more stuff. Man, that guy's good.
He's a convert, yeah. You guys.
Man, how many books? There were 12 of these?
Really?
I'm sure I only read the first three. Well, there's all sorts of time travel going on here.
Sorcerers and Seers? He had one come out in 2014. Drums
what?
Of Desolation.
Oh, he's still producing? The dude's an animal.
Seriously.
Guys. I would be willing to bet over $100 that he lives in American Fork or something like that.
Oh man. And the reviews, like, this is the greatest serialized novel since the Aubrey Matern series. My goodness.
He does live in American Fork.
He does?
Does he really?
In August 2005, Heimerdinger joined with Hearts and Hands for Humanity in American Fork, Utah.
Oh, Chris Heimerdinger.
I knew it was going to be
so one. So he of must the live in American Fork, right?
He wouldn't pick Spanish Fork. That guy's a patriot.
So there you go. Life-changing fiction. I mean, if you really want to change someone's life, write bad fiction. It works.
Oh, man. I really want to find Out of the Darkness Into the Light, you guys, and read you excerpts from it next time on the show.
That could be a whole podcast of its own.
Yeah, dramatic reading of LDS fiction. Yeah.
Oh.
That'd be a great podcast.
We could do a stage play of it, you know?
Forget remaking Ghost Rider, Mark. We're just going to do dramatic readings, one-man monologues of great LDS fiction. Speaking of which, actually, did you guys know Lisa Stoffer has written a play that's going to be performed here in Madison?
Wow.
No.
About ex-Mormons in Milwaukee. It's about ex-Mormons in Milwaukee, apparently.
Like, are there a bunch of ex-Mormons in Milwaukee that it's actually based on, or is it just pure fiction?
I think it's kind of based on her, maybe a little bit.
Okay.
She plays the lead.
What's the premise? I mean,
I think it's like a Mormon transitioning life outside of Mormonism and how weird everything else is, and a lot of Mormon culture references. And I think there's like a big picture of a beer glass, so it's got to be Milwaukee and beer, and I don't know exactly.
Interesting. Lisa Stoffer, do you see her around a lot?
No, I don't.
Should we let's close this podcast down.
Yeah.
I think we've gotten to it. I think we got to the heart of the question. But
hang on. We're talking about Lisa Stoffer. Why are you trying to pull the plug on that, Dave? You hate her?
Thanks for being with us, Mark. I think we all learned a little something about reading, writing, arithmetic tonight. And I think we all learned a lot about LDS fiction.
Oh, thanks a lot. It was great, Mark. Good to catch up with you.
Good to catch up with you guys, too.